Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Locally grown radio, your home for news talk and sports from Rudolph to Nakusa, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Allison Keyes in the Washington Bureau. Industry experts are telling T-Mobile customers they should be thinking about the wireless company's security after it announces a massive data breach. CBS's Chanel Call explains.
Data from 37 million T-Mobile customers has been stolen. The carrier says it was hacked in late November, but only discovered the breach this month. Millions of customer addresses, phone numbers, and birthdays were compromised.
In Arizona, Governor Katie Hobbs is continuing what some call the controversial practice of busing migrants away from border towns, which have been struggling. She is handling things differently than the previous administration.
I think we need to look at that practice and make sure that it's effective. It's something that provides support to those local communities. If we're spending the money to bus people, why not just get them to their final destination?
This is the government announces a record number of illegal border crossings into the U.S. from Mexico last month. Customs and Border Patrol processed migrants more than 251,000 times in December, up 7% from November. Another tech company announces layoffs of thousands of workers. CBS's Michael George explains.
Alphabet, the parent company of Google, is cutting 12,000 jobs, about 6% of its workforce. In an email, the company's CEO wrote, "Over the past 2 years, we've seen periods of dramatic growth. To match and fuel that growth, we hired for a different economic reality than the one we face today."
Millions of Americans are facing a mess of wintry weather this weekend, and you'd better gas up those snowplows. Kelly Cass is at the Weather Channel.
Now, the next system is bigger. It's going to be basically bringing a lot more snow to the south. Look at Texas, Oklahoma, and Arkansas. The European and the American models want to give some pretty heavy snow there, as well as portions of New England.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul is thanking first responders and heroes who stepped up during last month's blizzard that killed some 37 people.
The lessons from this storm, but also the stories that we want to repeat again from this storm. And that is to know that we have the reinforcements from an extraordinary community.
A day before the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, abortion rights foes are holding a national pro-life summit. This comes the day after thousands of demonstrators marched in the nation's capital at the annual March for Life, the first one held since Roe was overturned. On the agenda, the tactics of the anti-abortion rights movement as supporters seek further bans on abortion in the nation. Planned Parenthood is holding what it calls an abortion action blitz rally in Ohio. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Martin Hoke, the inventor of Navage Nasal Care, and I love Navage. I've told you about how your nose is the body's air filter, that Navage's powered suction will help flush out allergens, viruses, mucus, and germs, and that Navage will help you breathe better. But what do other people say about Navage? Like Tara, quote, "My doctor wanted me to do saline rinses for my allergies, but I've never been able to successfully use a neti pot. Navage uses suction power, so it's foolproof. There are nights when I'll have particularly bothersome allergies. I'll bust it out, and the results are immediate. It's such a relief. It's become a lifesaver." Unquote. She's one of over 100,000 online reviews praising Navage, the all-natural solution trusted by over 3 million people to help you breathe better, sleep deeper, snore less, and stay healthier without drugs. Navage is available at Walmart, CVS, Walgreens, Target, Rite Aid, and online. Navage, N-A-V-A-G-E, clean nose, healthy life.
No one ever made a highlight from the sidelines. Get in the game, join the conversation with WFHR's Playmakers. Call in Monday mornings from 10:06 to 11 with your sports thoughts. And Tuesday through Friday, listen in while we talk with some of the most insightful, intriguing people in Morning Magazine. Talk radio that speaks to you. Get in the game, join the conversation at 10:06 Mondays with Playmakers. And Tuesday through Friday, Morning Magazine on WFHR, locally grown radio.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually my husband. He just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope, to give them hope that mom is going to be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows dip down to about 19 tonight under overcast skies, winds out of the west 5 to 10 miles per hour. Highs level off around 26. Tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. Lows level off around 17. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy skies. A mix of clouds and sun. Monday, clouds on the increase by Tuesday. Highs in the upper 20s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 20.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. If you're just joining us, I am going to be playing speeches from Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. As we approach the Dr. King holiday, and I just want people to understand what the fight was about, the reason that his life was taken, and the fact that if you listen to what he was talking about in 1967, we aren't so far away from that today. And it is frustrating, more than frustrating, to hear people who don't know about these things, who clearly want to say, you know, that makes people feel bad. You know, injustice ought to make people feel bad, right? And the fact that, you know, these things have occurred, continue to occur in this nation, we've got to face it. So let's go to the phone lines quickly with CJ before we go back to Dr. King's The Other America. CJ, if you will, quickly.
Yeah, thank you, Earl. Dr. King, loved his speeches. I want to go back to the day where we're judged by our content of character and not the color of
our skin. Okay, so let me say this to you before you go there. As I said before, Dr. King also, you're going to hear a speech where he's going to say that the dream that I had became a nightmare. When Dr. King said, judge a person by the content of their character and not the color of their skin, he was in his 20s. This is Dr. King at the age of 39. He himself said that at the time that he said we should judge a person by the content of their character and not the color of their skin, that was a dream. His dream. It didn't happen, and that's why he said his dream became a nightmare. You'll hear it, because we're going to play it. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, also, January 2nd, there was an Alabama student, a young black man, that said, I'm leaving college because this is all about indoctrination and not education. So the mere fact that now, and look at Stanford, You just played a speech where he was playing in Stanford. You know you can't say grandfather in Stanford anymore.
Hey, CJ,
America.
Hey, CJ.
You can't say
I'm not going to get into foolishness. Foolishness is you saying right, cut him off, man. And then let's bring Dr. King back up because, you know, here's a prime example of someone who cannot comprehend what this is about. And the fact that he wants to ignore what Dr. King is saying and he wants to go back, meaning CJ, he wants to go back to when Dr. King said, judge a person by the content of their character, not the color of their skin, and dismisses what this Dr. King, who is a more evolved person, having lived longer, and who realized that the dream that he had was not becoming a reality. Connor, I don't know, are you still looking for it? Okay, because, all right. Start it up again.
Continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn riots. But in the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. What is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments of white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And so in a real sense, our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. And as long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these recurrences of violence and riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention. Now let me go on to say that if we are to deal with all of the problems that I've talked about, if we are to bring America to the point that we have one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, there are certain things that we must do. The job ahead must be massive and positive. We must develop massive action programs all over the United States of America in order to deal with the problems that I have mentioned. Now, in order to develop these massive action programs, we've got to get rid of one or two false notions that continue to exist in our society. One is the notion that only time can solve the problem of racial injustice. I'm sure you've heard this idea. It is the notion almost that is something in the very flow of time that will miraculously cure all evils. And I've heard this over and over again. There are those, and they're often sincere people, who say to Negroes and their allies in the white community that we should slow up and just be nice and patient and continue to pray, and in 100 or 200 years the problem will work itself out, because only time can solve the problem. I think that is an answer to that myth. And it is that time is neutral. It can be used either constructively or destructively. And I'm absolutely convinced that the forces of ill will in our nation, the extreme rightists in our nation, have often used time much more effectively than the forces of goodwill. And it may well be that we will have to repent in this generation, not merely for the vitriolic words of the bad people and the violent actions of the bad people, but for the appalling silence and indifference of the good people who sit around and say, wait on time. Somewhere we must come to see that social progress never rolls in on the wheels of inevitability. It comes through the tireless efforts and the persistent work of dedicated individuals, and without this hard work, time itself becomes an ally of the primitive forces of social stagnation. And so we must help time, and we must realize that the time is always right to do right. Now there's another notion that gets out. It's around everywhere. It's in the South, it's in the North, it's in California and all over our nation. It's a notion that legislation can't solve the problem, it can't do anything in this area. And those who project this argument contend that you've got to change the heart, and that you can't change the heart through legislation. Now, I would be the first one to say that there is real need for a lot of heart changing in our country. And I believe in changing the heart. I preach about it. I believe in the need for conversion in many instances and regeneration, to use theological terms. And I would be the first to say that if the race problem in America is to be solved, the white person must treat the Negro right, not merely because the law says it, but because it's natural, because it's right, and because the Negro is his brother. And so I realize that if we are to have a truly integrated society, men and women will have to rise to the majestic heights of being obedient to the unenforceable. But after saying this, let me say another thing which gives the other side, and that is that although it may be true that morality cannot be legislated, behavior can be regulated. Even though it may be true that the law cannot change the heart, it can restrain the heartless. Even though it may be true that the law cannot make a man love me, it can restrain him from lynching me. And I think that's pretty important also. And so while the law may not change the hearts of men, it can and it does change the habits of men. When you begin to change the habits of men, pretty soon the attitudes will be changed. Pretty soon the hearts will be changed. Now, I'm convinced that we still need strong civil rights legislation. There's a bill.
All right, we've got to go to a break. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. Again, you are listening to Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King in 1967 at Stanford University, The Other America. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back. For the one she came with, well, y'all came on the boat looking for hope, and all you can say is that you're looking for dope. These days ain't no compromise, and your pain ain't mine's half the time. A brand new excuse ain't new to me, but I made my moves with shackle feet, Cape Town. In today's day and age, we practice the self-pity of taking the easy way out. You ain't on them, him, and her, but when a blessing takes too long, that's when you go wrong. You selfish mother. Why so sad? Walking around with them blue faces. She said I'm down on my luck and the song I gotta have blue faces. I hit the bank and then told them color me bad.
I want to change some things.
I want to help more kids graduate from high school.
I want more of my neighbors to have access to health care.
I want to change what I see around here.
United Way is creating real, lasting change where you live by focusing on the building blocks of a better life: education, income, and health.
I just want to see more smiles on my sidewalks.
Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. For more, visit United Way at liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
I'm John O'Hurley, and I support Paralyzed Veterans of America because our heroes have sacrificed so much for our independence.
I had just come home. I had noticed my legs were swelling. Next thing I know, it was 3 weeks later. I was paralyzed. PVA has brought me back to life.
While parachuting with my platoon, my parachute didn't open. It left me paralyzed. I just don't think my family would be as happy as they are without the support that I received from Paralyzed Veterans of America.
For more than 75 years, Paralyzed Veterans of America has kept a promise to never leave a fallen hero behind. That's why Paralyzed Veterans of America is providing specialized medical care, life-changing treatments, benefits our heroes earned, the jobs they want, and the accessible vehicles and homes they need. Our paralyzed veterans have helped us live the lives we enjoy today. It's our turn to give them the best lives possible. To learn more, go to pva.org today.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
So, all right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm going to just try to get through this. We got a few more minutes of Dr. King's The Other America. So, Connor, let's just get right at it.
Federal open housing bill, a federal law declaring discrimination in housing unconstitutional, and also a bill to make the administration of justice real all over our country. Now, nobody can doubt the need for this. Nobody can doubt the need if he thinks about the fact that since 1963, some 58 Negroes and white civil rights workers have been brutally murdered in the state of Mississippi alone. Not a single person has been convicted for these dastardly crimes. There have been some indictments, but no one has been convicted. And so there is a need for the whole question of the administration of justice. There is a need for fair housing laws all over our country. It is tragic indeed that Congress last year allowed this bill to die. That bill died in Congress, a bit of democracy died, a bit of our commitment to justice died. If it happens again in this session of Congress, a greater degree of our commitment to democratic principles will die. Now, I can see no more dangerous trend in our country than the constant developing of predominantly Negro-central cities ringed by white suburbs. This is only inviting social disaster. The only way this problem will be solved is by the nation taking a strong stand and by state governments taking a strong stand against housing segregation and against discrimination in all of these areas. Now, there's another thing that I'd like to mention as I talk about the massive action program, and time will not permit me to go into specific programmatic action to any great degree. But it must be realized now that the Negro cannot solve the problem by himself. There again, there are those who always say to Negroes, why don't you do something for yourself? Why don't you lift yourselves by your own bootstraps? And we hear this over and over again. Now, certainly, there are many things that we must do for ourselves and that only we can do for ourselves. Certainly, we must develop within a sense of dignity and self-respect that nobody else can give us, a sense of manhood, a sense of personhood. a sense of not being ashamed of our heritage, not being ashamed of our color. It was wrong and tragic that the Negro ever allowed himself to be ashamed of the fact that he was black, or ashamed of the fact that his home, ancestral home, was Africa. And so there's a great deal that the Negro can do to develop self-respect. There's a great deal that the Negro must do and can do to amass political and economic power within his own community and by using his own resources. And so we must do certain things for ourselves, but this must not negate the fact and cause the nation to overlook the fact that the Negro cannot solve the problem himself. A man was on the plane with me some weeks ago, and he came and talked with me, and he said, the problem, Dr. King, that I see with what you all are doing is that every time I see you and other Negroes, you are protesting, and you aren't doing anything for yourselves. He went on to tell me that he was very poor at one time, and he was able to make it by doing something for himself. Why don't you teach your people, he said, to lift themselves by their own bootstraps? And then he went on to say other groups face disadvantages, the Irish, the Italians, and he went down the line. And I said to him that it does not help the Negro. It only deepens his frustration for unfeeling and sensitive people to say to him that other ethnic groups who migrated or were immigrants to this country just 100 years ago or so have gotten beyond him, and he came here some 344 years ago. I went on to remind him the Negro came to this country involuntarily in chains, while others came voluntarily. I went on to remind him that no other racial group has been a slave on American soil. I went on to remind him that the other problem that we have faced over the years is that the society placed a stigma on the color of the Negro, on the color of his skin, because he was black. Doors were closed to him that were not closed to other groups. And I'm to say to people that you ought to lift yourself by your own bootstraps. But it is a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. The fact is that millions of Negroes, as a result of centuries of denial and neglect, have been left bootless. And they find themselves impoverished aliens in this affluent society. And that is a great deal that the society can and must do if the Negro is to gain the economic security that he needs. Now, one of the answers, it seems to me.
We've got to go to a break. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. At 10 minutes left in this spectacular and heart-stopping and mind-altering speech of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, 1967, Stanford University, about a year or so before his assassination. We'll be back.
From the hometown of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news talk and sports station. It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy. You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with a link.
Okay. Smart.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Ladies and gentlemen, children at heart and of all ages,
start your day laughing with Mornings on WFHR.
7 to 10, Monday through Friday, join your host James and the best co-hosts in radio.
Keep up to date on local news, sports, and weather.
Along with Misty's Menu, Birthday and Anniversary Club, and Friday's Culver's Star of the Day.
Join the conversation weekdays 7 to 10 for Mornings on WFHR. We're serious comedy to start your day.
If I could be you,
and you could be me,
for just 1 hour,
if you could find a way
to get inside
each other's mind,
walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
We've all felt left out. And for some, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Walk a mile in my shoes.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Face it, life looks a little different. During these times, we're doing our best to keep our minds and bodies strong. And getting a flu shot helps us stay healthy, so we don't miss out on what matters. Like having game night at home. Yeah, can't do that while sick with the flu. Now imagine family movie night that your daughter can't live without. Well, that's ruined. And don't forget your uncle's socially distanced cookout. See? That's why it's important to be at our strongest. Every year, millions of people in the U.S. get the flu. Especially now, no one has time to miss out on moments that matter. So get your flu shot. Find out more at getmyflushot.org. Brought to you by the AMA, CDC, and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. Lows dip down to about 19. Tonight, under overcast skies, winds out of the west, 5 to 10 miles per hour. Highs level off around 26. Tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. Lows level off around 17. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy skies. A mix of clouds and sun. Monday, clouds on the increase by Tuesday. Highs in the upper 20s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 20.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Abrams Show. My guest is Scott Wheeler from the Epoch Times. It's Friday. That's Fridays with Sandy Williams. Sir, I just, you know, you're pretty aggressive, and irritated if we're Americans just like you are, but all Americans don't look through the same prism. And there's some of us that are Americans who see the amount of money that we spend on military. We make up 4% of the global population. And yet we far outstripe any other nation. And some, all of them combined, and we continue to spend almost $1 trillion a year, again, making up only 4% of the population. And you say that other nations shouldn't see that as a threat. I don't understand that.
Well, if you could demonstrate to me a pattern. Look, I respect all points of view, but at the same time, you have to look at facts. And the facts are China says it is announced, and it's done this for decades, what its objectives are. And when your potential enemy tells you what their objective is, you should believe them.
Well,
and when you see China is on track to have 5 aircraft carriers and 10 ballistic missile submarines.
How many do we have?
In 6 years,
sir,
7 years.
How many do we have?
Not that many.
5 aircraft
carriers? We have
carriers.
Less than that. So,
no. Well, we don't have less than 5 aircraft carriers. We have the largest.
We will have, because we are mothballing our aircraft carriers. We have some,
I thought,
but they are non-functional.
Okay.
And that's what I'm trying to tell you. We are not preparing for war with China. China is preparing for war with us.
Well, you know.
At the data. Look at the facts. China is on track. Look, you don't build aircraft carriers and ballistic submarines.
Well, I think you build them if someone who has announced that they are your enemy has them. And the United States has.
We've never announced that China's our enemy. Oh, they've announced that we're their enemy.
No. We've declared in many ways. We've declared in many ways, and many politicians have declared that China is the threat to America. And we've talked about it.
It is. Well, because China tells us they're a threat. When your enemy tells you that they're going to conquer you, should believe them.
Well, when your enemy, you just stated a conclusion. You see, 20 years ago, and maybe you were of a belief that 20 years ago China was our enemy, but 20 years ago we were not talking like that. We were of a belief that China was an economic ally, essentially, that they were a source of a big potential marketplace for us, and that they were a place that had many workers that could build what we wanted. And so China was viewed quite differently. We have evolved a different view of China over this time period.
Okay, well, hold on here a second. You're right about that. We had very foolish and naive beliefs about China, and part of the reason was because China was paying politicians to believe that, paying them lots of money, millions. But let me explain to you, while we thought that they were our economic partners and our strategic partners and said as much, China was saying, we're going to initiate the war with the West. They were saying, you won't trade L.A. for Taipei when they were talking about invading Taiwan. They said, the U.S. will not trade L.A. for Taipei, meaning if we go into Taipei, if you try to stop us, we will nuke L.A., Los Angeles. Those are belligerent and words and threats, and they've been saying them. While we were trying to be their ally, they were saying quietly and in some cases out loud, we're going to defeat you.
Well, I think that in many respects that had to do with and was a reaction to our policies associated with Taiwan. And Taiwan, obviously, is very contested. What the policies are towards Taiwan and Taiwan's status in the world and Taiwan's status vis-a-vis China are all very contested issues, so complicated that we have adopted a policy of purposeful ambiguity. You know, we've decided that we can't say with words what our policy is because our policy is basically that we have agreed that
because we don't.
Well, I don't know if we do or not, because we have this ambiguous policy, and we haven't had a president who's willing to declare what our policy is, other than the fact that we've said that we're Taiwan to be invaded with force, that we would consider providing support to Taiwan. That support is also always ambiguous, and it's apparently at this point, at least, restricted to armaments. And the status of that government, it remains ambiguous as far as we're concerned. And the status of Taiwan itself has been ambiguous. They believed that they were, when the Kuomintang was in power, I think they believed that they were the government of China, and that China was an intact country that was in fact subject to the control of the party in power on Taiwan. And it wasn't until about 2019 that people on Taiwan began to talk about what they called separatism. Separatism usually suggests that you're separating from a country that you are currently a part of. So I think the whole situation in Taiwan is very ambiguous, and I think that the American policies toward it could do nothing but fan flames if you were a Chinese government.
Hey, Scott.
So that's the same kind of logic, stream of logic, that would have lost us the Cold War, because many people... like you, people who were not you, but like you, who thought like you during the Cold War, believed that we should give the Soviet Union whatever they want because they've got nuclear weapons and they could be dangerous.
No, nothing of what I just said was dependent upon the threat of nuclear warfare with Taiwan. And in fact, I don't think that people felt that way about Russia and the Cold War. I think that, first of all...
Well, they did.
The Warsaw Pact...
I can assure you they did. You can go back and read their own writing. Again,
I lived through it. I lived through it, Scott, and I was a student
served during it. And I can tell you precisely who our biggest enemy was, mostly Democrats. In the United States, they undermined every effort we made to defeat the Soviet Union. Most of them, there were, but most Democrats were the ones undermining our efforts to defeat the Soviet Union. And they're the ones who were easily defeated by China, who have now been the mouthpieces for communist China.
Here's what I don't understand. When you talk about defeating the Soviet Union, there were nuclear weapons.
Well, I don't think the Cold War was ever a situation in which the United States was going to defeat the Soviet Union. And in fact, the collapse of the Soviet Union.
We did.
Well, the Soviet Union collapsed, and it collapsed in a vacuum. And I don't think there are many Americans. I mean, some would say that Reagan's parry and thrust with respect to the Star Wars called Russia to spend itself into military oblivion by too much military expenditure.
It was Strategic Defense Initiative, by the way.
Yeah,
and
Star Wars,
that's what caused it. Gorbachev, no, it's Strategic Defense Initiative. Star Wars is the name of a movie series. Gorbachev himself said that was the end result, that they could not spend. Their military was a paper tiger. Our intelligence was wrong about them. They did not have the ability to maintain the kind of forces.
Scott, hang on a second.
And that was the reason.
Hang on a second. I want to bring a caller in. Hey, good morning, Cassandra. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yeah. Thank you for taking my call. I just have a couple of comments to make about Scott's assertion about China. China makes a lot of statements that they want to be a superpower to rival the United States. And the fact of the matter is they will be one day a superpower. However, it will be a very tenuous superpower. Number one, they have a very closed economy in many ways. Oftentimes, they manipulate their foreign markets. We cannot conduct audits for many of their companies in order to trade on our American exchanges, on the New York Stock Exchange. But one comment that I do want to ask Scott, or one question I do have for him, one of the reasons why China is such a superpower right now, it's because of the investment of American dollars. And if China goes to war with the United States, they do realize that many of those American companies, that money that has been flowing into China, that money would cease. So they would not have the necessary revenues available to sustain a war. How would China sustain a war with the United States once they get caught off and we are no longer purchasing their products? Because it may be difficult for us to find other products, but of course there will be other countries that will be more than happy to fill that gap. So, Scott, that's my question for you.
It's a great question, Cassandra. Scott, you want to respond?
Spot on. Everything you said is accurate. The one issue I would take with it is, yes, they're dependent on these corporations, but look how they've gotten these corporations. They've actually enticed them into investing in China, and then once they get their plans, this happened repeatedly in the 1990s. Let me address Cassandra's concern, because she asked a legitimate question, and she obviously knows what she's talking about. China was enticing American corporations to come into China, and they would make them file. For example, there was a very big case in 1994 in Plant 85 in Columbus, Ohio. The union wanted to buy Plant 85 from McDonnell Douglas, and McDonnell Douglas would not sell Plant 85, which made MX missiles for the U.S. military, would not sell the factory to the union. Instead, they got the Clinton administration to give them an export control to sell Plant 85 to China for less money than the union was willing to pay for the factory. Then China turned it into a silkworm missile factory. We confirmed that. This happened over and over and over again in the 90s and has been happening ever since, but it really began and got in full force. But what to Cassandra's point, we don't have the financial capability to sustain a war with the U.S. They are taking – it's not going to happen tomorrow or next week, but they are – if you look at their global initiatives, the Belt and Road Initiative, they are securing critical elements to our weapon systems like lithium, lanthanides, and yttrium, dysprosium. They are securing around the world critical elements that we need for our military, and they are going to control the flow of those elements for our weapons. My issue
with what you said is China enticed the business community to come to China. I was working in industry at that time, and when the company that I worked at went overseas, it wasn't because China somehow enticed them. It was because our government passed the laws that made it possible for those companies to go overseas. They couldn't have done any of that without our government agreeing to that. So they didn't entice them to do anything.
Look, I just said that. I pointed this out. They did this. They went to what did McDonnell Douglas do? They went to the Clinton administration, who was getting millions of dollars in illegal campaign donations from communist China, to issue an export license so they could export highly sensitive U.S. weapons technology to China.
We didn't have to agree with that.
He's talking about a specific plant and a specific, but the World Trade Organization,
by the way, we didn't. Our military export control regime was raising Cain over this. While it was being approved, they were saying, we cannot let this factory go to China. They will turn it into a silkworm missile factory. It was the politicians, it was Bill Clinton specifically, that signed the export control waiver saying we're going to override our own advice from the military saying don't send it, well, and we're going to let them buy it.
Let me go to break, Sandy, and then we'll let you respond.
No, I'm not going to respond. I have a question.
Yeah, because we're right at the top of the hour. Can we go on, or we need to take the break?
Yeah, we need to go to break.
All right, we got to go to break. We'll be right back.
Light the lamp.
All the way down, he scores! A 200-foot empty net goal for the captain.
And defend the ice.
Driving in, centering pass. Oh, great sliding left-hand save.
This is America's college hockey capital.
Fire one towards the net and scores.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger hockey.
Right here on WFHR, locally grown radio, your home for Wisconsin sports.
I'm Tumani. When I was younger, I may have did some stupid things. I committed some crimes, I even got shot, but I'm not a criminal.
That's right, I'm Jamal. I work for Youth Advocate Programs. Yeah, I was Tumani's advocate, helping him stay out of jail, stay in the neighborhood, get a job, and work hard to see a better future for himself. If you have a change of mindset, you can have a change of action.
As a little kid, I experienced trauma and I acted out. Made some mistakes, but I'm not a mistake.
No, she's a good student and a great kid. As Jalen's Yap advocate, I'm always here for her. With the Youth Advocate Programs, I was able to connect with Jalen.
YAP is a community-based alternative to youth incarceration, congregate placement, and neighborhood violence. After completing our program, 86% of participants were arrest-free. YAP works.
And now, I'm a YAP advocate, helping kids like me find a better way.
Youth Advocate Programs. Others talk social change. We make it happen. Learn how at yapinc.org.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's art supporting artists in their own words.
Stop surfing the dial. You found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. Friday's with Sandy Williams. My guest is Scott Wheeler of Epic Time. Sandy,
So, Scott, I understand what you're saying, and that your view is that China is a threat, and it's a threat that is sitting ready to do something to the United States. You talk about the threat of trading L.A. for Taiwan. And you talk about how it is that their Belt and Road. I understand that. And you talk about their Belt and Road initiative as being one that creates, and at least economically creates threats because it puts them in control of some vital resources. So my question is, what is the implication of all this? Because essentially you're describing China as our enemy, and you've indicated that. China views us as their enemy. It's hard to tell where that started, right? Who's the one that initiated the "you're our enemy" kind of a view of things? But once two countries decide that they're enemies of one another, it begins to dictate a bunch of behaviors. It dictates what kind of munitions you build, what kind of infrastructure militarily you build, and how you conduct yourself. And so, there is definitely in world affairs the Newtonian principles of actions and equal and opposite reactions, and we obviously have that in play with China. But all of your talk about China suggests to me that what is the policy you think we ought to be implementing with China? Should we be considering a preemptive war against China to stop them in their belts and suspenders initiative, and to do what?
It's Belt and Road Initiative, but we should take back our industrial base into the United, bring it back to the United States. Yeah. We all remember the shortage of masks, and China was the only place you could buy them. Why in the world have we allowed this to happen? It's at the political level that all these decisions have been made. We've allowed our own industry to migrate.
Well, now, Scott, I was in business for a long career, and I had clients who moved to China. I can guarantee you that the United States government had nothing to do with their decision to move. And in fact, what China did have to offer people was a very organized approach to building a new factory and finding workers. So if anybody invented a new widget that they wanted to get manufactured quickly, many of them went to China because it was much easier to build the widget. The Apple
That's not inconsistent with what I said.
You said the government fostered it, and I'm saying the government made it possible
to not let here's what. Our government created a very hostile business environment for American companies and China. You guys were accusing me of misstating something by saying China enticed U.S. businesses. They enticed them by creating an environment of cheap labor and lack of government oversight. Now, a lot of that was a facade, and it did not turn out as many businesses, many industries discovered once they got there, trying to the agreements that they signed. But that's a different issue. What happened was our own government, look, for example, one huge stupid thing, and I wrote lots of stuff about this and produced an entire documentary on this alone. We had a mine in Southern California, an open mine, that was producing what's called lanthanides, rare earths. They are critical for our strategic defense. Now, China was, in the 1990s, China was paying certain politicians in the United States and had a very good relationship with spouses of those politicians. And they wanted the Mountain Pass mine shut down because they wanted the Baotou rare. At that time, the Mountain Pass mine in Southern California produced 92% of the world's lanthanides and almost 100% of the United States. They claimed that the Mountain Pass mine was an environmental hazard, shut it down, and then we began importing all of our lanthanides from the Baotou rare earth mine in China. In 2004, Baotou says while we're in the middle of a war, two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, they say, hey, we're not going to sell you any more lanthanides. Just shut us off. Those were critical elements for our JDAMs and our missile guidance systems, the things that we really relied on. And China said, no, we're not going to sell them to you anymore. The Defense Department suddenly woke up, ignoring my 1998 documentary that said this would happen, completely ignored it, and then suddenly their hair is on fire. We need these elements, rare earth elements, and we can't get them because China says we're not selling them to you. They truncated the market. That was what they did. That's economic warfare, and China was involved in it. And just as you pointed out, at that time, we were calling China our buddies and our friends. We were willing to let them sell us the critical elements that are used in high-tech weapon systems. You see what I mean? I mean, it makes no sense unless you look at it from that understanding, that perspective.
Well, you know, clearly... The opinions that you have rendered, that's what they are. They're not facts. And
they are facts.
No, whether or not.
Everything I said is fact. I didn't make up any of this. It's not my opinion. I recited facts for you.
Well, again,
things that actually happened.
Well, again, based on the fact that China is now one of our arch enemies, again, somebody that we've been a major trading partner with over the last two decades or three decades, this is not in keeping with the fact that we have become those trading partners, and the fact that others want to somehow ignore that, and now they're the arch enemy number one in this nation. It's hard for a lot of us to swallow when we know that, you know, all of our corporations that were there and waxing rich off employing those people from China. All of a sudden now, they're our number one enemies. Look, we got to go. Thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Connor, for a great week. Sandy, as always, thank you. We'll be back on next Monday. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. See you later.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.